Jazz legend Ella Fitzgerald once said, "The only thing better than singing is more singing." Let's test that theory on Pop Life.
On-demand audio from WAER is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. To give or to find more information, visit our website, waer.org.
If we modify that quote to say, the only thing better than singing TV shows is more singing TV shows, does it still hold true? Welcome to another edition and episode of Pop Life, the podcast that explores popular culture in America. I'm Joe Lee. Joining me once again is Jeff Herbert, entertainment writer for Syracuse.com and the Post Standard. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much for having me. I love to talk about TV, music, and all things that come together in one place.
There we go. That's what we do. That's why we're here. In June of 2002, the reality singing competition show American Idol took American TV audiences by storm.
This is American Idol.
15 years later, the show has given rise to dozens of bona fide superstars, including Kelly Clarkson, Jennifer Hudson, and Carrie Underwood, and spawned a new reality TV format, the singing competition.
To me, Eric is the one that had the most control and the grasp on the melody, and just felt like Ignatius maybe went off the rails just a tiny hair. And so based on that, I would go with Eric.
It's a definite yes for me.
Kelly.
Craig, it's as big as that voice is of a yes, yes, yes.
I'm not really interested.
Wow.
I think what you've done 2 weeks in a row, in my opinion, guys, is that, look, like I said before, this is very difficult in the short space of time to come out here every week and you try and make a record. You're putting something together which is different. We haven't seen an act like this before. I think the chemistry works. You are a total star.
Jeff, the search for America's unsigned talent continues. Now that the American Idol show will be moving and relaunching on ABC, Fox has introduced us to a new competition show called The Four. It's a show that starts where other singing competitions end.
Who are The Four? Find out this January on Fox.
It's kind of shrouded in mystery at this point. What do we know about The Four so far?
Well, it's based on another series format, and the thing that's kind of interesting about it is basically there will be four contestants at a time, but they can be shuffled around, and people that were early on in the season can be brought back into those final four spots. So it's a good thing for people who watch a show like that and then get upset when one of their favorites gets voted off, and they can potentially bring them back in a way that other shows couldn't.
One of the things I read, and there's not a ton of information out there, I guess they're trying to keep a mystery about it, but it's almost like King of the Hill of singing competition. So you have these four contestants are established or will be established, and then you have other contestants coming in trying to knock them off.
Right.
And they could be anyone. They could be people who have been in the business for a minute to a YouTube star. I think they're going to invite the viewing audience to submit materials. They could be invited onto the show to challenge these four individuals. And I guess after a period of time, if you've survived, like Survivor, if you've survived this thing, then I guess the four of them battle it out. Does that sound interesting to you?
Well, like you said, there's a lot of mystery to it, and it remains to be seen how the format will work and who the contestants will be. But it definitely does add intrigue because it's different from America's Got Talent or American Idol or The Voice and other shows that, you know, promote singing amateurs but have a different twist to it, different element to it.
It's being likened as a cross between the end of American Idol, their process, and the knockout rounds of The Voice. How different is this from the other shows? We have the Voice, which have coaches instead of judges, and Idol still goes through this lengthy process of auditioning, and they focus a lot on the audition process. And then they get into groups, and then I guess you rise up out of a group.
For one thing, The Voice has succeeded in a way that American Idol has failed, because they've, you know, managed to use big names and superstars to come on the show and add influence and add ratings, because they've got a diverse panel of judges and coaches that come on the show, and then the fans of those judges and coaches come on and watch. American Idol, on the other hand, they have to establish the focus on the singers as opposed to the judges, and so that's why they have such a long audition process on TV, because they want you to become fans of the contestants as they go on there, so you've got to stay loyal to the show throughout the season, whereas The Voice, you can kind of jump in on that week out of maybe another month later, pick up the show again, and the contestants maybe don't have necessarily as much prominence when they finish the show, whether they win or lose. The four, I think it'll be interesting to see how that happens, because it's got an element of establishing the contestants early on, but also maintaining that loyalty throughout and establishing some stars along the way that they can bring back.
That's going to be interesting. One of the things that I often think about with these shows and talent in America in general is with the sort of considering the grinding search for unsigned talent, and you have a handful of shows that are doing that. You have to wonder if there's any good unsigned talent left out there, or are they starting to just bring in mediocre performers? You have to sort of wait. I guess most of these have an age limit. And so maybe you're waiting until some 12-year-old now becomes 16-year-old 4 years from now. I looked at, say, the American Idol list of winners. You got some notable folks in there, but mm-hmm. There's a lot of busts, too. A lot of one-hit wonders, a lot of didn't-really-go-anywhere types. You do have to wonder, is there enough singing talent in America to provide the show with good content?
I don't think talent is the right word to use, because when you watch these shows, yeah, you want the talented people to go on because they deserve it. They deserve that chance. But at the same time, if you're watching the show and you're going to keep watching it every week, you want to be entertained, which is why American Idol had issues with some of the less than stellar performers, like, say, Sanjaya, going as far as they did on the show, because they were entertaining. There was amusement to the viewers to have those not-so-great contestants on the show. Is Taylor Hicks a mega-talent singer? No, but he was entertaining and he was fun to watch and people loved him, and that's why they voted him on to win the show. He was talented, absolutely, but is he, you know, the next Justin Timberlake? No.
He'll fill up a room at a casino, I guess.
He could do that, but not an arena.
No, not an arena. So how do we know how these shows are performing? Do we know if there's audience fatigue around this format yet?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily audience fatigue, but I think it's audiences getting splintered, you know. If you're a fan of reality TV or even talent competition, that's great, but you're not going to watch 6 or 7 shows of basically the same concept or the same entertainment going on. So as a result, you know, a lot of these shows are not able to sustain high numbers because of competition or possibly fatigue.
What do you predict for this? You think there's more than 1 or 2 seasons, or...?
Well, reality TV is very cheap to make. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you have a couple big-name judges or hosts on a show, and then you put all the focus on the talent, the people who come on the show, they're basically giving you free content, free entertainment mm-hmm. just to be on TV. So that's not very expensive to make. If you want to win the show, that's great, but what they care about is their bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, reality TV shows are very cheap to make. That's why we've had the Kardashians for 15 years now.
Lord.
Oh, I'm sorry, 10 years, not that long. It just feels longer.
Well, what we'll do is we'll check back in at some point in January to see how the show is going. And once we know a little more about how it'll function and what the format is, we'll come back, have a conversation, and see if our listeners find any interest in that. Now that the new season has been released, it's time to check in on those crazy, zany kids from Stranger Things.
On Halloween night, Will's a sort of shadow. Maybe all of this is happening for a reason.
Set in 1984, the Stranger Things story continues as supernatural forces from the Upside Down continued to affect Hawkins, Indiana. Are you a Stranger Things fan?
Absolutely. My wife and I binge-watched the first season, the first chance we had, you know, a weekend without the kids. It was so good that with the season 2, we can't even wait for a weekend without the kids. So we're binge-watching 2 or 3 episodes a night. We haven't finished it yet, so I'm going to avoid talking about too many spoilers.
Yeah.
But yes, we love the show.
Me too. I've chosen not to binge watch. This is one of those things that I enjoy so much that I do want to stretch it out a little bit. It's I liken it to sitting and eating a gallon of ice cream in one sitting, and then you want dessert 2 days from now, and you have nothing to eat. I want to spread it out a little bit, but we are going to be sensitive to the fact that if you are listening to this, if you're not all the way through or you're just starting, we're not going to do any real spoiler alerts, but we will get into a little bit into the storyline and all that good stuff. Let's do a reset on this, just in case you've not seen season one of Stranger Things. It's a show that takes place in fictional Hawkins, Indiana in the mid-1980s. It's a kind of a coming-of-age meets sci-fi horror group of kids investigating or battling strange supernatural forces from an alternate universe called the Upside Down. These kids are, there's a group of them. People have sort of likened them to the Goonies or other coming-of-age type stories. And one of their friends goes missing. They have to sort of investigate and find out where he is, but he is trapped in the Upside Down. They rescue him. He comes back. He's affected. Here we are in season two. So there's a little bit of a reset for you. If you've not seen it, I'll say it at the beginning. I'll say it at the end. If you've not seen it, you owe it to yourself to check this out.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I really enjoy about this is for people of a certain age, like me, it takes place in the mid-80s. And so the retro look back, the little kernels that you get watching the show, I just find very intriguing. In this season, you see yard signs for Bush-Reagan election. We see, obviously, the Ghostbuster costumes that they're wearing because Ghostbusters is hot at the time. Scenes in video arcades. Remember those?
Yeah.
Where you go to a video arcade, play the games, the goal of being the top performer on there, entering your initials as the top performer. And one of my favorite scenes that you'll see in there, and this isn't really spoiling anything, but it's it just a reminder of how difficult technology used to be. And so you have one of the characters who wants to view footage taken on a camcorder, wants to watch it on the VHS, but the tape is too small.
The one you have to either you have to plug in the actual cable to the camera, to the TV, or you have to get some sort of adapter. And that's, you know, a technology issue that our kids today have no idea about anything because everything's digital.
Absolutely.
They just download it, email it, tweet it, Snapchat it, whatever.
It took her several minutes to be able to view that footage, which, you know, today things are kind of instantaneous. So, and then, the synth music that's happening in there, you know, the sort of the music of my time. And then one of the newer characters is an employee at Radio Shack, which used to be a giant.
Which is convenient. It helped with the plot quite
exactly.
a bit. And speaking of the Goonies reference, it's Sean Astin.
It is. So, you know, just those little interesting things are enough to just make me watch because it just, you know, takes me back to my younger days. But the plot is picking up, and there's a lot of discussion out there whether people think it is sort of a worthy sequel to season one. What do you think? I find it to be.
I definitely think it's held up in quality. They've added a few new characters, but they've also allowed more development of individual characters. You know, you used to have a group of kids in one scene. Now you can have more scenes with just one or two of them at a time because you care about all the characters, and so you're more interested about those developments and what's going to happen. At the same time, I'm really impressed. Like, the kids, they're 12, 13 years old, they're all fantastic actors. They're doing an incredible performance, and Winona Ryder herself is doing an amazing job as well. I mean, her stress level is at, you know, 27 on a scale of 1 to 10 at all times, but she is amazing. And you got to love the Sheriff Hopper. And at the same time, I think they do a really good job of balancing those nostalgic moments of, you know, tribute to the 80s with plot development and intrigue and moving the story forward.
Yeah. So here we are, season two. Will is back from the Upside Down, but he's still being affected by the alternate universe. Dustin and Lucas have a new obsession with Mad Max, a new girl in town who is obviously going to join the group. And then there's, and she's one of a handful of new characters. And Mike is really missing Eleven.
I'm asking you to try to understand.
I don't understand.
Fine. That's fine. Just do not blame her. All right? She's upset enough as
it is. I don't blame her. I blame you.
That's okay, kid. That's okay.
No, nothing about this is okay.
New characters include Sam Owens. He's the Department of Energy executive who's committed to the research of the Upside Down, played, you know, nicely by Paul Reiser. And Max is new, and her stepbrother is also an interesting but not well-developed character. I think Max is being developed. I think we can kind of predict what's going to happen with that storyline. But her brother, stepbrother Billy, I'm assuming stepbrother, I'm three episodes in, and I'm not sure the relationship has been established. But they're new in town, and Billy, from what I'm reading, is showing you know, signs of potential racist attitudes toward Lucas. But his character is pretty one-dimensional at this point.
So far, yes, but at the same time, it's not necessarily bad because you consider that in the first season, any conflicts with the people that were trying to stop the Upside Down, even when you had the situation between Steve and Will's brother, you thought that there was going to be a love triangle fight going on, and it never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And now we finally have someone that's actually not part of the Upside Down within the school community that might actually cause more tension.
Yeah, we do have the sort of subtle love triangle going on between teens Nancy, Steve, and Jonathan. And then the Byers family is trying to get back to normal in the first couple of episodes now that Will is back, but Mom is being obviously and understandably overprotective. He's having some episodes, but they are attributing those episodes to post-traumatic stress disorder. Obviously, we know it's not going to be PTSD, but that's how it's being set up. And then the show is promising some backstory on 11 as well. We see in episode 2 the introduction of a past test subject, someone with the tattoo number 8 mm-hmm. that also has some kinetic ability. So I think it's going to go some interesting places.
And they're already saying that it's going to potentially have 4 or 5 seasons, but I think right away with establishing that 8 character, they've also set it up for potential spin-off series as well. If 11 is number 11 and we've got number 8, that's the 8th of those test subjects, there could be 7 other series out there. There could be 10 other series. There could be 30 other series out there.
I think that's the route to go because I think if you put your stock into child actors who are going to grow very quickly before our eyes, if the storyline is so short that they still need to be children, it just doesn't work.
Right.
So unless you're going to follow them through their teenage and college years or something, I think the spinoff route, if they want to see this continue, that's the route they're going to have to go.
Mm-hmm.
We think you're going to like this series if you haven't started watching it. If you have and you're just a couple of episodes in, we apologize if we've spoiled anything. But
it's too good not to talk about.
It is too good not to talk about. It is entertaining. And, I wouldn't call it scary, but it does get a little nerve-wracking. The music plays nicely for the intense scenes. And even though the new foe, the new monster, is something we've seen before in other projects, these shadow monsters.
Right.
So we have this tentacled shadow monster that is now sort of following Will. We've seen that before, but I still find it to be pretty effective. A giant tentacled shadow monster that is hovering over the entire town. And so it's pretty ominous. And then it does. Okay, one spoiler. If you need to tune out, tune out. We do see, I think, in episode 3 that it inhabits Will's body. That's how it ends.
So that adds another element to it. It's not just a big, scary monster that someone's going to have to fight with. There's also the internal struggle. There's a lot of connections, too, between both the shadow monster, Will, and the town, and it's going to get more and more complicated as it goes on. And honestly, I don't see any way that they can wrap it all up by the end of the second season, which will make you just want more of it, which mm-hmm. is great because more of it's coming.
Yep. We're going to be sure to check back in a few weeks to see how the show is progressing in this season. I'm not going to binge it again. I like to do maybe onesies, twosies so I can enjoy it for a nice stretch of time. Again, it is Stranger Things Season 2 available streaming now on Netflix. Pop Life is a production of WAER Syracuse Public Media. If you have a subject that you want us to discuss, leave a comment on the Pop Life Facebook page. And to get past episodes of the podcast, listen on demand at WAER.org. Be sure to check out what Jeff has going on over at Syracuse.com and the Post Standard. Until next time, I'm Joe Lee.